This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
I'll go into your van, witchy woman.
I'm Nave from Ireland.
And I'm Emily, living in Chicago.
And we have never met in real life.
Fortunately, you don't need to live on the same continent to make a spooky podcast.
So that's exactly what we did. We created Ronan Pine, our folklore, mythology, and spooky stuff podcast.
You can find us on your favorite platform, and we already have over 35 episodes ready to binge.
Don't forget the spooky shorts.
Right. We also have a bunch of short episodes, if that's what you're into.
Come on, get spooky with us, and frick yeah, folklore.
Hey, what are you up to?
Oh, hi. I'm listening to this awesome podcast.
Ooh, I love finding awesome new podcasts. What is it about?
Well, it's about a bunch of things. Sometimes history, sometimes hauntings, sometimes it's spooky, and sometimes it's funny, but it's always interesting.
Ooh, okay, that sounds great. What's special about it?
Well, each week, Celine picks a topic and reads it, and...
Wait, what?
Matt creates a pairing of a treat and a drink to go with this peculiar tale.
And they
talk about it and they joke about it.
Hold on.
And sometimes they have guests and have even more fun.
Wait a second.
What?
That's our podcast.
Yeah, you're right.
Why are you listening to our podcast?
Well, you know, we're heading into the long dark of winter, and that can make some people feel kind of isolated, and listening to Peculiar Pairings is a great way to feel like you're hanging out with good friends at the push of a button.
Well, that actually sounds really nice. Kind of sounds like everyone should be listening to Peculiar Pairings.
You know, I couldn't agree more.
So if this sounds like it's piqued your interest, you should search Peculiar Pairings podcast on your favorite podcasting platform today.
Yeah, we're everywhere. Come check it out.
Find us. We're there.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again.
Yes, always good to see you, friends.
Yes, absolutely. And I have a couple things to say before we get started. First of all, I want to say hi to our newest Patreon member. The name, I'm going to give both names, and that's Poetic Hawkins. So welcome to our Patreon. We desperately appreciate you and just want to give a little shout out and say thanks so much for joining us over there on Patreon. And if anybody else wants to join us on Patreon, we do some fun stuff over there. And we also, you get ad free. So if you don't want to listen to all of our ads and intros from other pods and things like that, then jump on over and join us over there. So appreciate
that.
Yeah,
go check us out.
Yeah. And then another thing that I wanted to say was that we have a new Apple review. So we got a new Apple review, 5 stars, great podcast, guys. It says, great podcast, easy to listen to, great pace and good chemistry. And that is from the Break from the Grind podcast. So if you are unfamiliar with them, go check them out. They're on all the podcast platforms too. And thanks to them for giving us a little shout out on Apple and a review. And if anybody, if you don't want to join us on Patreon, or you don't want to spend that $5 a month, because that's all it costs, you can definitely go give us a little review and rating and all of that on Apple. We desperately appreciate that as well. So thanks so much. What show are you, or what story, I should say, are you going to be telling us about today, Declan?
I'm going to be talking about Captain Sully.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah. Interesting. That's... little plane incident that happened.
Yeah. I mean, I know there was a big deal with him, but I don't know all of the details because, you know, it's news stuff and you know how I feel about the news sometimes. So, but I know that he was kind of touted as a hero, right?
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Awesome.
What are you going to be telling us about today?
Well, I am going to be telling you about an interesting little heist that happened in Canada. Although not really little, but it was a heist nonetheless. So, you know how I love heists. This is a good one.
You're doing brutal, right?
No, I'm doing bizarre.
Oh, well, I guess it's a double bizarre episode then.
It's a two bizarre episode. Oops. Our bad.
Oopsies.
And to go with the story, I brought the bourbon maple leaf cocktail. And the ingredients for that cocktail are 2 ounces of bourbon, 1 ounce of maple syrup, 1/4 to 1/2 ounce lemon juice, and a pinch of ground cinnamon. The steps are to, in a glass, stir together the bourbon and maple syrup until well combined. Add lemon juice and cinnamon and stir, and then add a bunch of ice cubes to it. So, are you ready for this cocktail, Declan?
Yes, let's give it a try.
I'm excited because I love the flavor of maple syrup, so it's going to be tasty.
Who doesn't?
Right? I do like it. No shocker there.
That is pretty good.
I mean,
a little
maple
sweet,
syrup
but...
and bourbon. I tested it with 1/4 ounce and had to add more because it's really sweet with a full ounce of maple syrup in there. And I like sweet drinks. So if you don't like sweet drinks, you might even want to go more like 3/4 to a full ounce of lemon juice if you need that little buffer. Because I added a little bit more and it definitely cut down the sweetness and made it more palatable and not quite so in your face with the sugar. So. Are you ready for my heist story?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So this is going to Canada. We're going back to Canada. And we're going to talk about barrels. And now, normally when we talk about barrels, it's a very bad thing. It usually is more on the brutal side when we talk about barrels.
Yes.
But this is, you know, more of a bizarre thing. And So this story is a little different from our normal barrel stories. We're going to talk about barrels of maple syrup, which is why I brought the drink that I did, because maple syrup's in the name. And, you know, maple syrup is a staple in many homes across the world, not just in Canada and the U.S., where a lot of maple syrup originates and gets consumed, but it's everywhere because it's delicious. People use it to cover pancakes and waffles for breakfast, while it can also be used in savory dishes like glazed ham and spicy chicken and things. You know, it's a natural sweetener, so it's kind of nice to use that in place of like refined sugar a lot of times.
Yeah, but the best syrup is refined sugar. Like Mrs. Buttersworth, that's not maple syrup.
It is not maple syrup.
High fructose corn syrup with maple flavoring. It is just maple flavoring.
Yes. And, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with you, but honestly, I don't eat things with syrup anymore. If I'm going to have like pancakes or waffles, I usually make a fruit kind of a syrup.
Compote.
Like I make a fruit compote because that's what I am craving when I have those kind of things. Your dad, on the other hand, I don't know if swimming in syrup is a good definition. There's no room. There's every ounce of that pancake or waffle is like a sponge and full of syrup. So,
well, real maple syrup has its applications, but if you're eating like Eggo, you got to go Mrs. Buttersworth. But if you're having like your make yourself pancakes or something, you got to do real maple syrup.
Yeah, I would agree. So I'm going to chat a little bit about how maple syrup is currently made. It starts with a maple tree. And typically in January and February, holes are drilled into the tree. Depending on the size of the tree, it could be 1 to 3 holes that are drilled in the tree. A tap is inserted into the hole, and then tubing is connected to the tap. Used to be they would put the tap in the tree and then hang a bucket. And I think some people may still do that, but like the high producers of syrup connect all of the trees with tubing that runs into their sugar shack where they process it. The changes in temperature between day and night causes the tree to push the sap out through the holes into the tubing, which feeds the sap into larger collecting storage containers. Like I said, those would be located in the sugar shack, which is super cool that it's called the sugar shack. The water is then removed from the sap through reverse osmosis, which concentrates the sugar content. The thicker product is then boiled to 104 degrees centigrade or 219 degrees Fahrenheit to further remove the water. This is continued until the syrup reaches 66% concentration. In general, how many liters of sap do you think it takes to make 1 liter of maple syrup, if you had to guess?
I think it's a liter. Liter soda bottle. Okay.
I think.
I'm going to say 500.
Way lower. It takes 40.
Okay.
Thank God it's not 500, because then
probably be more expensive.
Yeah, as if maple syrup isn't expensive enough. So, like I said, it takes about 40 liters to make 1 liter of maple syrup. Now that I've talked about how it's made, let's chat about some of the history of a group specific to maple syrup called the FPAC, which is the initials for a French name of the group in Quebec that manages like the whole distribution and everything of the maple syrup. It's a French name. I'm not going to even attempt to murder the name of it. just know that it's called FPAC. It's also known as the Federation of Quebec Maple Syrup Producers, or QMSP. Quebec is the province of Canada where a large portion of maple syrup is produced. It's like the largest. It's like over 75%, over 80%.
It's the French part, right?
Yes. Which is why FPAC is their name, and I didn't want to murder it because just trying to read it, it twisted my tongue in my mouth and in my brain, and I was like, no, I'm not even going to try. Sorry. I mean, I used to take French in high school, but that was a really long time ago, and I don't even want to try and pronounce it. Basically, this organization began in 1966 when the maple producers came together to protect their rights as producers and collectively market their product. It also controls the distribution and sales prices of the syrup, essentially eliminating any free market for producers and ultimately regulating who owns the product. Which, depending on what side of the tree you are, could be a good thing or a bad thing. And not all of the maple producers agree with how the organization is run, their current regulations, because they basically say if you have maple trees and you're in Quebec and you're making maple syrup, it belongs to them. Whether you want to be in their group or not, they say, according to their bylaws or whatever, that they own the syrup.
Yeah, it sounds like communism.
It's weird, for sure. So a lot of the producers feel it's too restrictive because there's no free market. But the goal of the organization to begin with was to make it so maple syrup has a base price and it's always sold at that price.
So do they have like maple syrup moonshiners, people doing it illegally in their own backyard? And
I think so, yes.
Nice.
Yes. Which I was watching a documentary about this whole situation, and when they found out, you know, that somebody was trying to do it, sell it on the free market, they fined her millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, I can't remember the amount, and basically bankrupted her to the point where she couldn't do anything because of the amounts of fines that they put on her because she was just trying to run her business the way she wanted to. Yeah.
Jeez.
So, yeah, you know, some people liken it to like a mafia type situation and that they're, you know, not great. Since the production of maple syrup is a natural process, it can fluctuate between years based on climate and environmental changes. Because of this, in 2000, the organization started a strategic reserve and has multiple warehouses to hold thousands of barrels of maple syrup. This helps to ensure that basically that the world won't run out of the tasty staple and the price will stay fairly stable. Meaning if you have a bad syrup year because of the weather and you don't, the trees aren't producing as much sap and you're not getting as much syrup, you're not going to then be forced to jack up your prices because they have thousands of barrels just sitting in a warehouse that they can pull and put on the shelves for the stores. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even know that they would have something like that, but it, I mean, it makes sense and it's a cool concept, I guess, but you know.
Are they like wooden barrels or plastic drums?
No, they're metal barrels.
Okay.
Like an oil barrel, but.
Full of maple. So it wouldn't be like aging. That was my main question.
No, it's not. It's not aging. Not that anywhere that I read. They just keep the barrels for in case there's, you know, a shortage, and then they can pull from those barrels to supply stores and consumers and stuff. In July 2012, an inspector was conducting an annual inventory for the organization. He started to climb up some of the barrels at one of the warehouses to conduct his counting. However, the barrel did not hold his weight the way he had hoped. Expecting the barrel to be full of 600 pounds of syrup, he was surprised when he discovered that the barrel was actually empty. So he's climbing around, and a barrel shifts because it's not 600 pounds. And they find out that it's empty and start looking around and find that there's more than just that one empty barrel. It turned out many of the barrels were empty, and some of the barrels were actually full of water rather than syrup.
Hmm.
How did this theft happen, and who stole the syrup is the question. The theft was reported to the police, and 250 investigators were assigned to the case. During the investigation, over 200 suspects were interviewed. It was discovered that over several months in 2011 and 2012, the contents of over 9,500 barrels of syrup had been stolen.
Which, a lot of pancakes.
Yeah. I mean, okay, there were still barrels of syrup in this warehouse, and they still, 9,500 barrels were stolen.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's a lot of freaking syrup, man. One barrel is worth approximately $1,800, which is more than the price of oil. Isn't that crazy?
Well, if you think about it, there's probably a lot more oil in the ground than there are maple trees on the surface. I think you get a lot less from extracting the maple than you do pumping oil.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's 40 liters of sap to make 1 liter of syrup.
I wonder what the translation from crude oil to gasoline is.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, if you think about, okay, how much syrup are you putting on a stack of pancakes? Couple tablespoons, quarter of a cup, maybe. You're not using a lot. But how much oil do you need in your car?
Only a couple quarts, depending on the car. So in the United States, it takes about 42 gallons of crude oil to produce 19 to 20 gallons of gasoline.
How much to how much? How much oil
42
for...
42 oil 42. To produce 19 to 20 gallons of gasoline.
Okay, so double.
Yeah, about double. So a lot less.
Definitely different.
Yeah.
You're talking 40 to 1.
Yeah.
In syrup. So...
just pour gasoline on your pancakes. It'll be cheaper.
It would be cheaper. 100% it would. I'm thinking they wouldn't taste the same, though.
Probably not.
We're not recommending that you eat your pancakes with gasoline. Please don't do that, anyone.
That's a free country. You do what you want.
Just don't call us and blame us for it. It was the biggest theft to date in Quebec. In 2012, the value of the heist was 18.7 million Canadian dollars.
Jesus Christ.
Which would be about 24.3 million dollars in Canadian currency now, which for us Americans translates to about 17.1 million dollars at today's values. Which,
that's a lot of money.
Is insane. Sanity. It's so crazy that one, and that was one warehouse, and that wasn't even the entire warehouse. So one warehouse, I mean, I didn't see in any of my sources how many barrels were in the warehouse, but it was over 9,000.
I've heard of oil barons, but never Maple Barons.
Maple Barons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So investigators were able to determine that all of the empty barrels had marks on them from a forklift. The forklift used by the Federation doesn't leave any marks, so the investigators knew which barrels had been tampered with. They contacted local rental companies and found a forklift rental under the name of one of the suspects, who also happened to be a truck driver. His name was Sebastian Justress. Probably murdered that. Sorry, Sebastian. My bad. There's a few other French-sounding names in here because it's French-Canadian region. Yeah. So I'm apologizing now if I don't do a very good job. They learned that the owner of the warehouse that was storing the stolen syrup, so the warehouse owner, he was not associated with the Federation. He just owned the facility where they were storing the barrels. His name was Avec Caron, and he happened to have a bit of a criminal history, possibly some connections to the mafia. And when he realized what they were storing there, he was like, he light bulb moment was like, this seems like a lucrative opportunity for me. So he contacted Justress and asked him if he knew anyone capable of selling maple syrup on the black market. Justress put Caron in touch with Raymond Valliere, who happened to have a criminal background in selling things that he wasn't supposed to. So, good black market dealer guy. The thieves would take the white unmarked barrels from the warehouse to a remote sugar shack that was used for syrup processing. There, the syrup was removed from the barrels and the barrels were refilled with water, and then the barrel was returned to the warehouse. However, after a while, they just started bringing the empty barrels back instead of filling them with water. They were like, let's take out that step, that unnecessary step. We'll just put the barrels back empty. Valliere then sold the stolen syrup to Etienne Saint-Pierre, who worked as a syrup exporter. He then transported the syrup to US, Germany, and Japan. After a lengthy trial, three men were given long sentences. Avec Caron, the warehouse owner. I'm going to start that over. Avec Caron, the warehouse owner, was sentenced to 6 years in jail and fined $1.7 million. Richard Valliere, the black market seller, was sentenced to 8 years in jail and fined $10 million. Etienne Saint-Pierre, the exporter, was sentenced to 2 years of in-home incarceration and a fine of $1.03 million. Sebastian Justress, the truck driver, was sentenced to 8 months in jail, and he maintained that he didn't know that the syrup was stolen. He just said he was hired to move these barrels back and forth, and he was like, I didn't know what they were doing with them. And there is a new series on Amazon that was inspired by this case. And It's inspired. It fully states at the beginning of every episode a little disclaimer that this is not the true story of the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist, because we watched the series. It's actually really good. It's a fun little show, but it in no way, shape, or form makes it seem like any of the stuff that happened in the true story is what happened in the TV series. The show is called The Sticky, and the lead actress is Margot Martindale, who, I mean, if you saw her, you'd know who she was. She's been in a lot of shows and movies. My personal favorite character of hers was Mags Bennett in season 2 of Justified, which we've talked about Justified on here before. Mm-hmm. In Justified, she played basically a hillbilly heroine drug dealer who liked to make apple pie moonshine. And she killed a few people using apple pie moonshine that she put poison in. I think that's been her best character that she's done. I'm sure other people have other ideas. I really like her. She does a good job, and she's good in the show. It's a good show. We finished it. It would be a good chaser or recommendation, but I'm saving my chaser for something else. So.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. So
very
tell
interesting
us your
story.
Yeah. I thought it was fun.
Okay, let's get into Captain Sully. Chelsea Sullenberger was born on January 23rd, 1951. Chelsea had a unique interest in planes and jets from a young age, which developed from him seeing military planes landing and taking off from the airport near his house. He would frequently build model planes and aircraft carriers as a child. At age 11, Chelsea had a high enough IQ to join Mensa International, which is a high intelligence society for people in the 98th percentile or higher, which I didn't even know existed. That sounds like some knockoff Illuminati type thing.
No, it's a thing. And people like, yeah, it's if you're super smart, you have to have like a certain IQ and you have to be able to prove it and all this stuff just to get in. I don't know what they do, but so you might be right.
I didn't find anything what they do either. Like,
it might just be something that you get to join,
put on a resume or some shit,
and be able to brag that you're a member of Mensa. Clearly, I am not a member of Mensa, but you know.
When he was 16, he began taking flying lessons at his local airport. He graduated from Denison High School in 1969 near the top of his class of about 350 graduates. After high school, Chelsea obtained a Bachelor's of Science from the United States Air Force and was picked to join a cadet glider program, and by the end of the year became a flight instructor for the Air Force. The Air Force sent him to Purdue to obtain a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology, which I can't even begin to think of what that means. Industrial organizational psychology.
I don't know. That's weird. Like, maybe the thought processes behind how you organize like
industrial things,
industry, like how,
maybe
like a certain, you know,
like how many hours in a work week or whatever, like things like that, I guess.
Or, I mean, potentially, or maybe, you know, like, I mean, anything could be considered an industry. So, I mean, if we want to go back to the maple syrup heist, we could talk about how, you know, maybe they needed that person that is familiar with that organizational skill to talk about how they organize, how the processing of it goes. I don't freaking know. That's a great question, but clearly someone in Mensa came up with that shit and it's not me.
So after getting his master's, he went to Columbus Air Force Base in Mississippi and began his undergraduate pilot training and gained his pilot wings in 1975. Chelsea mostly worked as a training pilot to help new recruits learn the ropes of their aircrafts. After his career in the Air Force, Chelsea started working on commercial aircrafts as a pilot. He worked for U.S. Airways from 1980 to 2010 and ended his career with more than 50 years of experience and 20,000 hours of flight time.
Wow.
In 2007, what?
I'm just thinking like 50 years at a career.
Yeah, that, well, I could see it. Flying must be pretty fucking cool. Driving cars is cool, and flying jets is like 10 times more than driving a car, so.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool, but just the thought of, I just don't know how you find something that you love that much when you're that young. That you could do it for 50 years.
Just pick a career and stick to it. You pick it at age 11 or whatever.
Right? I don't know. Wow, that's good on him.
Yeah. In 2007, he founded the company Safety Reliability Methods Incorporated. The firm provides strategic and tactical guidance to enhance organizational safety, performance, and reliability, and would help perform safety investigations and inspections for the Air Force and National Transportation Safety Board. On January 15, 2009, Chelsea was the captain of U.S. Airways Flight 1549. He was flying an Airbus A320 taking off from LaGuardia Airport in New York. The plane took off around 3:25 p.m. with remarkably clear skies, speckled with small clouds and about 10-mile-an-hour winds. After a few minutes in the air, while the plane was still climbing to its desired altitude, it struck a flock of geese about 4.5 miles from LaGuardia.
Yikes.
Geese. Canada geese.
Yikes.
Going back to Canada.
Whoops.
The passengers on board the plane heard a large boom and saw smoke and flames coming from the engines of the aircraft.
Oh.
So scary. That's terrifying.
I'm terrified.
If that ever happened, though, I want this guy flying the plane.
No shit.
Chelsea took control after he realized that both engines had failed while his co-pilot, Jeff Skiles, started the checklist to try and get the engines running again. The plane reached an altitude of 3,060 feet with a speed of 213 miles an hour.
Wow, that's so fast.
At 3:27, Chelsea initiated a mayday call to the nearby air traffic control. They directed Chelsea to turn back to LaGuardia and land on runway 13. However, he was unable to. They tried to direct him to Teterboro Airport in New Jersey, but he was unable to make it there as well, with his main option being the Hudson River, which kind of goes in between New York and New Jersey. It like splits it down the middle a little bit.
Yeah.
The plane flew over the George Washington Bridge at around 900 feet. So just imagine you're driving on the bridge and you look up and you just see.
I would need a new pair of
smoke coming out of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
I would need a new pair of pants. And this is, what'd you say, 2009?
2009. Yeah.
Okay. So 9/11's real fresh on everybody's minds at that point.
Rue, I didn't think about that.
And freaking there. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Kelsey told the cabin to brace for impact, and the plane took an unpowered emergency water landing at 3:30 p.m., going about 140 miles an hour.
Oh.
Yeah. The flight attendants described it as a hard but smooth landing with no bounce but heavy deceleration. So it sounds like just somewhat of a normal landing, honestly. Yeah.
I've been in some real sketchy
yeah.
bad landing situations that when you landed, half the plane cried out because they were scared
clapping.
To death about what happened. So,
yeah, I can't imagine. He's such a good pilot. He can land on the water and have it feel like a normal landing.
That's insane.
Chelsea opened the cockpit door and directed the passengers to exit through the emergency doors over the wing of the plane. All 155 passengers evacuated the plane onto the inflatable rafts and slides attached to the emergency doors. Chelsea walked the cabin twice to ensure everyone had exited the plane safely. Two ferries arrived within minutes and began rescuing passengers from the water. Chelsea was held in high regards for safely landing the plane and received a Master's Medal from the Guild of Air Pilots and Air Navigators, the Medal of Valor from the San Ramon Valley Fire Protection Department, and the Founders Medal by the Air League. So he got a bunch of awards and shit for, because no one died from that crash. Right.
That's amazing. Well, the geese.
The geese, yeah, they don't count.
Yeah.
They're annoying anyways.
So this was a brutal for the geese story.
Yeah, brutal
so
for the geese.
So it definitely fits.
They got obliterated.
Our put brutal into a blender. category.
Yeah.
And potentially brutal for everyone else.
Any fish?
He hadn't fish been flying. Yeah, there's probably some fish death involved.
Yeah,
brutal for the plane, because I'm sure it didn't survive that landing.
Simply not.
No. That is terrifying.
Super scary. Super scary.
I just think about the one time that I was on a plane and I thought I might actually die on this plane, and just crying, and your dad was like, it's going to be fine. And I'm like, you don't know that it's going to be fine. Mm. And he's like, but you don't know that it's not going to be fine. And I was like, well, it's potentially not going to be fine. And he goes, well,
do not
seem
in our favor.
There's nothing you can do about it now. So I don't know that crying is going to make it any better. I mean, he was really nice. I make him sound like he was not being nice. He was just trying to calm me down because I was crying. I wasn't hyperventilating, but I was crying because I thought I was never going to get to see you again. And he was like, well, you know, it is what it is at this point. I'm like, well, great attitude to have.
Well, if you think about it, if you did die in a plane crash, I'd probably get a lot of money from it, from the airlines. Probably more than just a normal death.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but if I had, that probably would have made me feel better, honestly. So
I just redid my my insurance policies through work and stuff, and I was looking at the life insurance thing. You guys only get $25,000 if I get killed or dismembered at work.
That's not very much.
No, it's not.
That's not.
No.
It's a good thing you're in a fairly safe industry. Yeah, I think you...
I can't think of a single way to die at work.
Well, I could.
Building caught on fire, maybe, but...
Maybe.
I work right next to a door. I could get out in less than 5 seconds.
I was thinking about something else, but...
Yeah, well, like we'll not
work,
jinx it.
Workplace, yeah. No, I don't want to.
Maybe if Graham Young was my coworker.
Oh, right. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to last week's episode. And he's serving you tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good thing I don't drink coffee or tea at work.
Right. Well, do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. And I don't know if we've already done this one or not, but it's fairly fresh. My chaser is the show Landman.
I don't think we have. I think just you and I have been talking about it.
Yeah, that show is probably one of the best shows I've ever seen. And it's not even done yet.
I would agree.
New episode dropped today because today is Sunday.
We already watched it.
Oh, really? Nice.
Did you watch it yet? It's good.
I just watched episode 5. Episode 5 was a little slow, but it... So basically, for people that don't know, the show is about an oil company following mostly the manager of an oil company, who's played by Billy Bob Thornton, one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
And he just has, like, the best, funniest lines ever, like... Most sarcastic, just dry humor type.
Right.
It's so funny.
Have you watched... So the creator of the show and the head writer of the show is Taylor Sheridan, who did Yellowstone and Lioness and Tulsa King and Mayor of Kingstown and probably other stuff that I can't think of off the top of my head. Have you seen any of his other shows?
I put on Tulsa King, but I didn't fully watch it. I was just staring at my phone most of the time. But
okay. So
I think Landman's the only one I've like actually paid attention to.
Dad and I were just talking about it today after we finished the current episode that dropped today. And we both agree that it is for sure Taylor Sheridan's best show. And
yeah,
Yellowstone has been on for years and there are a lot of seasons and they just, I think they just finished the last, the Yellowstone spinoffs too. So 1883 and 1923, he did those two. Those are both very good, but I think Landman is his best show. It's the best it's the best acting. There's a few annoying characters in there, but for the most part, it's so good.
Yeah, the wife is pretty annoying, but she causes him to have good lines. So I'll deal with it.
It's true. Fine. It's so true. She just sets him up over and over again to just deliver the best lines of the show. Yeah, I wholeheartedly endorse that chaser. That's a good one.
What's your chaser?
Well, my chaser is not as fun as that, but it's pretty cool. It's an article that I found on Good News Network that apparently there was a coffee shop in Massachusetts that offered free coffee for anyone who came in dancing. So if you came in, if you opened the door and you walked in dancing and you continued to dance for a period of time, they gave you free coffee. And they recorded it and then put it on TikTok. And there were like millions and millions of views on TikTok and Instagram and stuff. And it just was like, they did it just for like a feel good thing. So people were coming in and dancing and getting free coffee for it and just made people smile. So I thought that was a really cool idea. Yeah.
I wonder if anyone came in doing like full Michael Jackson routine. Like
I saw a couple clips. There was a moonwalk involved in one of the clips.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
It's a cool chaser.
Right. I think that wraps us up for today. Yeah.
It was a good episode. A double bizarre on accident because I didn't go back and read your text to me.
Well, I will say you definitely could argue that your story was brutal.
Yeah, because a bunch of the people suffered from PTSD. Like Sully said he couldn't sleep for the next like month or so. Just like
at least,
even though he saved everyone. I mean,
right. But it's the what if. Like, what if I fucked up? I wouldn't and fly didn't again. Land it? Or what if there had been another solution and I didn't take that solution and somebody got hurt? Or
if he tried to land that on like a runway, he could have not made it hit the ground. That would have been a lot more devastating, I think.
Oh yeah.
Like a lot more inertia than just landing in the water, or he could have hit another plane. Like
yeah. Although I don't know if going as fast as a plane goes, if you hit the water, it probably just feels like you're hitting something solid anyway.
I mean, 140, yeah. But you got the long belly of the plane, so
yeah.
I feel like it'd work like a speedboat almost, like if you hit it at the right angle.
If you hit it, maybe. I don't know. I don't ever want to find out.
Skipping rocks. Yeah, me either.
I don't. That one little episode where I thought I wasn't going to survive a plane ride, I don't need to ever repeat that.
Yeah, no thanks.
No.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Love you, Mom.
Yes, thank you. Love you too, bud.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.